So we return to Moses in these last couple of weeks of November before the Advent season begins. And as it has been a little while since we traveled with Moses and the Israelites, I have a brief recap. So the book of Exodus begins with the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt who has enslaved the Israelites because he's worried he'll never have enough. However big he ever feels or whatever he does to make it real, it's never enough for Pharaoh. Just one more go, one more time to fill it up, one more time to kill. But whatever he does, it's never enough. It's never enough. And so the midwives are commanded by Pharaoh to kill all the Hebrew male infants because he doesn't want to have a rebellion on his hands in the future. But fortunately for Moses, God was working already through the courageous actions of two midwives and Pharaoh's daughter. And in a book written in patriarchal times, we have written down for posterity, for all of time, the names of these midwives, Shiphrah and Puah. As God works through these women and Moses' mother is able to nurse her precious babe until he's old enough to go to the palace to live with the Pharaoh's daughter, Moses grows up in the lap of luxury. Prime beef and 1,000 thread count Egyptian cotton sheets. Spa days every day and chauffeurs to get you through the worst of any traffic. What more could anyone want? This adopted prince whose name is both Egyptian and Hebrew. Justice. There is something within Moses that calls for justice. So Moses meets out justice against the abusive Egyptian beating a Hebrew slave. Unfortunately, Moses' justice is murder, and he has to run. Run hard and run fast and run to an unknown place with unknown people. But here, when Moses meets out justice, when he defends seven daughters against bullies who won't let them give water to their sheep, Moses is then invited into their home, and Moses finds a home. In Midian, Moses will make a home, taking a wife and even having children, until a faithful trip into the wilderness has him come across a wondrous and inexplicable sight of fire and green leaves. This wondrous and inexplicable sight of fire and green leaves makes no sense because the laws of science dictates that those green leaves should blacken and turn to ash, but they don't. And with his bare feet on holy ground, his very calloused skin touching the very dirt into which the Creator breathed life, Moses hears God saying, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob." God has seen and God knows the misery of God's people, and so he will bring them into a good and broad land. Broad and good like the orchards of Niagara and the vineyards of Prince Edward County. God's people will have enough to eat and will have time to rest, but the road to that good and broad land, that has more potholes than the 401 after a long, hard winter. And so Moses anticipates this, rightly so. This road will have traffic jams that makes Toronto's rush hour feel like Germany's Autobahn. And so Moses says to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" God's reply, "I will be with you." Not surprisingly, I think, this answer is not enough for Moses. So Moses said to God, "If I come to the Israelites and say to me, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" Moses' question may seem a little impertinent. Moses' question may seem most sincere. Moses' question to God might even seem a little manipulative. Why is it so important that Moses knows God's name? Is it not enough that he's seen this wondrous and inexplicable sight of fire and green leaves? In Moses' personal experience, is that not enough? In a world of magic and Pharaoh has his own sorcerers. To know an object's name is to possess power over it. Let me repeat that. In a world of magic, to know an object's name is to possess power over it. But God is not an object to possess. God is not like a bedroom painted in your favorite color, or a doll or a character we can dress up or buy weapons for. God is not like a car we can drive whenever we want at whatever speed we think we want. God is no object to possess. God is not a thing we can have power over. And so God puts a fork into Moses' path of understanding. When Moses asks God for God's name, God answers with a sentence. A sentence. A yay, a sure, a yay. This first person sentence is what we transliterate as YHWH, Yahweh. And its meaning is ambiguous. It can be translated and understood in a number of ways. I am who I am. I am what I am. I am the existing one. I will be who I will be. I cause to be what I cause to be. These are all the ways that God's name can be interpreted when we hear God being called Yahweh. And again, Yahweh is only our best guess as to how YHWH is actually pronounced. The fascinating truth in this story is that Moses cannot really know God's name. Sure, Moses may understand that God's name has something to do with being, but that's about it. It's not clear the way I say Trish, and most of us here would know that I mean Trish Gehry. It's not clear the way I say Pat, and most of us would know I mean Pat Remkelewon. It's not the same way I say Patty, and if you know who Patty is, you know I mean Patricia Ferris and not her mother. It's not clear the way I say Patricia, and for those of us who know her, know that I speak of Patricia McKee, who's unable to join us because she's no longer able to drive. God's response to Moses fascinates me. Is God being sarcastic by giving him a sentence as a name, as some scholars suggest? Is God putting Moses in his place? Is God refusing to be labeled and contained? However we choose to interpret God's response, God's name has something to do with being, and this God reveals God's self to Moses, telling Moses, Eyeh Asher Eyeh, that he is the God of his ancestors, of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And moreover, this God is saying to Moses, go and assemble the elders of Israel and declare that God will bring God's people out of misery and into a land flowing with milk and honey. Furthermore, the people will listen to his voice. This God in Exodus chapter 3 fascinates me. The story of Moses gives us a glimpse into the vastness of who God is. And whether Moses wanted to know God's name for sincere or selfish reasons, I love how the story reveals that God answers Moses anyway. That's the grace in the story. Didn't matter what Moses' motives were, Moses asked the question and he got an answer. Now, God's answer may not be an easy one to swallow for Moses or for some of us sitting here today because it's not clear. It's ambiguous. But the truth is, as much as humanity loves to classify and put into categories and explain away the mysteries of this world, the mystery of God, the knowledge of God, the being of God cannot be owned or possessed for our personal gain or our personal power. And it is this God who hears the cry of God's people. It is this God who calls Moses, whether he's ready or not, because justice demands to be meted. And it is this God who calls us, the church, Morningside High Park. For God says, I am the God of your father and your mother. I am the God of this community of faith and of the church throughout the world. I am the God of those who recognize me. I am the God of this world. Amen.